We studied a previous lesson on the subject of honesty and truthfulness, and this is related to that, but a different focus. It has to do with honesty and truthfulness relating to the duties that we have in life. So I've entitled it, Being Reliable, Being Trustworthy, Being Conscientious in Our Duties, Being Loyal to the obligations that we have undertaken or that are ours by virtue of the relationships that we sustain. I have a contrast here that may bring it into focus better. It's the opposite of being undependable. Somebody's got a duty, you don't know if they'll fulfill it or not. You can't depend upon them. That's the opposite trait. We don't want to have that character trait. Or doing it, but doing it sloppily. Somebody's got to come behind you and fix everything up because you were not attentive and were not willing to exert the effort to do your job well, whatever that job may be. That goes hand in hand with being careless. You just don't care. Get through the job. And untrustworthy in handling things put at their disposal. Are you the kind of person somebody can entrust something to you and know they don't have to worry about it? You're trustworthy. You'll take care of it. Whether there's something financial or something precious or a duty that needs to be performed for you or others, are you trustworthy? That's what we're going to be looking at in our study tonight. Let's turn to begin in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2. Paul talks about stewards. A steward is someone who's been entrusted with something. In this particular case, Paul is talking about his stewardship as an apostle of Christ. And what's been entrusted to him are the mysteries of God, the gospel of Christ. And he considered that a very solemn responsibility. And indeed it was. He talks about his work. He said in verse 2, well, let me start in 1. Let a man regard us in this manner. As servants, it's interesting, by the way, in our society, it's getting to where they don't want to use that word servant. There's nothing wrong with the word servant or slave used in the proper context, especially if you got a good master. And Paul was not afraid to talk about being a servant of Christ. And then he says steward, a steward or stewards of the mysteries of God. He explained that in chapter 2, what he means by the mysteries of God. The things that God had planned for a man in the gospel, but men did not know until it was revealed by the Holy Spirit through the chosen apostles and prophets. He said, we are stewards of the mysteries of God. He discusses it in Ephesians chapter 3, the mystery that had been revealed in Christ. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy. Now, he's applying that to himself, but that is a principle. A principle is just a fundamental truth that has a number of applications. This is not limited to his stewardship as an apostle. He just said that's a characteristic of stewardship. When something's been entrusted to you that's important, then you're expected to be trustworthy in carrying out the responsibilities connected with that. And so we have that principle stated. Now, on your lesson, we suggested some things that we have been entrusted with. Not revealing the gospel like Paul. But take, for example, if you're a husband. Have you been entrusted with any duties relative to a person? Your wife. And when it talks about husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church, is that romance? No. It may say something about the need for romance, but he said Christ loved the church, and what did he do? He what? Gave himself up for her. And so here's a woman entrusted to your care, to take care of, to seek her honor, her glory, her good. That's been entrusted to a husband. In the Old Testament, in the book of Proverbs, it talks about a prudent wife is from the Lord. It's like a gift that God gave you. You know, what if we use this when we're in our family study? What if, for example, you wanted to do something for Mark Harnick? And so you got together and said, let's see what Mark could really use, would really be beneficial. Several of you got together and maybe it cost some money and you decided, we'll put the money down. We love Mark. We're going to do this for him. We give him this gift. So then you go over to Mark's house and Mark's got some dogs. You find the dogs over there chewing on the gift, tearing it up. How do you feel? So it looked like to me he could have been counted on to kind of take care of this thing, keep it away from the dogs and put it up somewhere. What if it's out in the yard in the rain? So you gave him this gift and you would expect him to be trustworthy and appreciate it and taking care of it. God gave men a gift, a wife, and expects us to be trustworthy stewards. Vice versa, on the other side, the wife, we find that she is to respect her husband. Not only Ephesians 5, but 1 Peter chapter 3. In that famous passage in Proverbs 10, this woman is pictured as a woman who is busy. The pictures of planting vineyards and weaving clothes and involved in merchant practices, but it all has to do with actually taking care of her family. What a wonderful responsibility has been given to the woman. She's made by God to do those kind of things. Some women don't take their duties very seriously. They'd much rather be making money, earning money for a company, something like that. And so it's expected in stewards that they be found trustworthy. What about the parent-child relationship? God's blessed you with the wonderful privilege to have children. Is that it? You just got them? Or are there some responsibilities that come with that? And is God expecting people to say, well, I do. I'll be sure they have clothes to wear and food to eat. Is that it? Is that it? Or is there more to this stewardship of being a parent? And so you take the child. Is there any stewardship relative to the parent? Especially as they get older, isn't there? To care for the parent. And oftentimes, as parents get older, children feel no responsible. Get them out of the way out somewhere so I can go with my life. But this idea of stewardship to be found trustworthy in whatever we've been entrusted with, these are just suggestions. I've got employer-employee, for example. Can you think of others that might apply? Okay, we'll talk more about employee in just a moment. But anyway, there's the principle in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2. You can make the applications to the various aspects of life. Look at Nehemiah chapter 13. Nehemiah chapter 13. You'll see in verse 11, Nehemiah said, the house of God has been forsaken. And what does he mean by that? Well, the provision that should have been made for the Levites and the singers so they could devote their time and energies to their work had not been made. So either out of laziness or inattention or fraud or whatever, that duty had not been provided for. And so he says the house of God has been forsaken, those who attended to the house of God or the temple. So then Judah brought the tithe of the grain, wine, and oil into the storehouses. Note verse 13. In charge of the storehouses, I appointed Shelemiah, the priest, Zadok, the scribe, and Pedaiah of the Levites. And in addition to them was Hanan, the son of Zachar, the son of Mattaniah. Now note the reason given. For they were considered reliable. Your version may say faithful. The New King James says faithful. They were faithful. What does the word faithful mean? Would somebody define it?
Trustworthy.
Faithful. Faithful can refer to when you say full of faith, you can talk about a person who's a believer, or you can talk about somebody who can have full faith in you. That's the idea here. You can have full faith in them. You can trust them to do what they've been given the responsibility to do. So this particular trait, this character trait, Nehemiah said, that fella has that trait. That fella has that trait. Would to God we would be among the number that Nehemiah might consider. But how do you get somebody like Nehemiah to recognize that trait in you? What you've done in the past, what your practice has been, what your track record is, as it were. And so it didn't just overnight, you say, oh, I'll pick this guy, he's trustworthy. There's some foundation to that, and so we lay that foundation maybe in these other fields. The family relationships, for example, the job, how we take care of our jobs, etc. The parent-child relationship. But in any case, he judged these men faithful. So I have here a very similar paragraph. Again, we've been appointed by God to certain duties. Now, so he appointed these men over these tasks. Husbands to wives, wives to husbands, parents to children. There are the verses. Children to parents. Now, I've got these other verses. Employees to employers and employers to employees. All right. And I've got a couple of verses there. I want to look at Ephesians chapter 6. Look at Ephesians chapter 6 with me. Look at verse 5. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, not fear and trembling of the master. That's not the idea. It's fear and trembling of Christ and his expectations of you to be attentive to your duty. So you're not just saying, well, you be a good slave to a master who threatens you. That's not his point. With fear and trembling in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ, not by way of eye service as men pleasers. You don't want the master to see you doing your job? Is that what he's saying?
No.
What does he mean?
Not but
construction, isn't it? But as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, whether the master is there watching or not, whether he knows or not. You are what we're talking about in this class. Reliable. You're trustworthy. He doesn't have to come always check on you. You're going to do the job you've been allotted to do. That's your character. Not because you're afraid of getting beaten. If that's just who you are. When we began this class, someone in the class defined character that way. It's what you are when no one's looking. That was a good definition. And that's what he said. Not by, based on eye service as men pleasers. With goodwill render service as to the Lord. And not to men. And he said, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. So here's the responsibility of being trustworthy, reliable. But then he turns it around in verse 9. Masters, do the same things to them and give up threatening. Knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven and there's no partiality with him. So he is expected to handle the authority that's been delegated to him in accordance with the one who delegated it. That's the nature of delegated authority. We're answerable to whoever gave us that authority. And so there's that responsibility. And so This passage here in Ephesians chapter 6 talks about what terminology we use sometimes, the work ethic. The work ethic. That whether anybody sees or not, you've given a job and your employer can depend upon you to fulfill that. Look at Matthew 24 by contrast. Matthew chapter 24. We're not going to read all of these verses. I have to read enough of them to get the setting here. I may need to read them all. Verse 45. Well, let me just ask the question I've got on the lesson. See how you answered it. What is the difference in the faithful and sensible slave and the evil slave? What's the difference? That's right. The evil slave, it wasn't that he was out robbing people and killing people or something. He just was not reliable, trustworthy to do the work. You'll see that here. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is the slave whom his master finds so doing. The New Revised Standard Version says, we'll find at work. But when the master comes back, man, that guy's doing his job. He's been gone, but he comes back, that guy's doing his job. And so, verse 47, he'll put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that evil slave says in his heart, my master's not coming back for a long time, and he began to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, at an hour when he does not know, cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, weeping shall be there and the gnashing of teeth. Of course, this was particularly addressed to the apostles. Was their master going to be gone? Yes, he was going to go back to heaven. He was going to ascend to heaven. But he was going to leave them with a solemn responsibility and marvelous powers. But he would expect them to do the work that they were entrusted with. That would be the idea of being a faithful, a dependable, a trustworthy servant. And so this is the kind of character trait that we're talking about. So I've got a question on the previous paragraph. Are we reliable to fulfill the duties as God intended? Look at question two in your suggestion point for parents. Being reliable, trustworthy, conscientious, and loyal will impact your children for the rest of their lives in their relationship to their parents, their family, their work, their jobs, their marriage, their service in the kingdom of Christ. So, I don't know if any of you parents did this, but this is a good time to talk about some practical application with your children, how this is going to impact your life in the future. If a person hasn't been taught to be trustworthy and reliable in their duties, what's going to happen to their marriage, the husband's duty to his wife? What's he going to be thinking about himself all the time? Or vice versa with the wife? What's going to happen to the job? There's people that can't hold a job. Of course, they always blame the employer because they don't do the work. Oftentimes, I'm not saying every time, but they don't do the work. They can't be depended upon. Where do they learn that, or where did they fail to learn that? And look, we have a lot of young people growing up that have not been taught the work ethic. Life is not all about having fun. I have here on your lesson, Genesis 2:8. Where was man placed when God made him? In a garden. What does verse 15 say he was put there for? To cultivate it. To work. Work is not a curse. I know what the curse was. Oh, you've sinned and you're going to have to work. No, no. It's the weeds and the thorns, the difficulties that was brought about because of the sin. Working, we're made to work. And we need to teach our children that's not a bad thing. And young people in our audience, if you got parents that assign you chores and expect you to do them instead of getting upset, I don't want to watch TV, I want to play on my game or whatever, you may be thankful for those kind of parents. And parents do not need to feel bad about demanding. Children learn the idea of being responsible for the duties that you are given. And so this work ethic can be so important in all phases of life. Husbands and wives have problems because one or the other is lazy about taking care of their duties, and it becomes a pain in the side and a problem in their marriage because they don't address themselves to the duties they have as husbands and wives. But all of that can be taught way back when the children are young, teaching them the work ethic. When you get married, there's not going to be somebody standing over your shoulder saying, hey, you need to be more attentive to your duties as a husband or a wife. You learn that as a part of your character, and then it applies to those fields of endeavor. I have here on question number one on the suggestion for parents. Is it not the responsibility of parents, number one, to demonstrate so your children are watching the parents? If they're lazy and make excuses for not getting their duties taken care of, guess what they're learning? Woman that don't take care of her house. Man that doesn't take care of the things around the house. Doesn't take care of his job, whatever it may be. They're learning. They're watching. But not only the demonstration, but to inculcate, to teach them, to train them in the work ethic. And so I just asked the question, how can they do that and when should they start? That's a question for parents. When do you start doing that? When they're 16? Too late. It's too late. Yeah, but you know, when they're young, they're my sweet little kids. I don't want to mistreat them. If you don't want to mistreat them, teach them to work and expect them to fulfill that responsibility, because you're training them for the future. Any comments thus far?
I think accountability goes along with that, Steve. You know, we can have them to do chores and that kind of thing, but if we don't hold them accountable, you know, we can praise them, but if we don't hold them accountable when they fail to do it, then we're failing in our future.
All right, good point. Holding them accountable for that instead of just looking the other way. Good point Linda makes. I've got question number three. And you don't have to answer this one. It was just for thought. What can you do as a parent to instill reliability and conscientious fulfillment of responsibilities and loyalty to duty? If any of you parents that's raised kids want to suggest something for the class, I'm willing to listen. Boy, those are great suggestions. All right, we're good. We'll move. Yes.
Going back to that question one, just for a moment about work, it's good to see a child see a parent sweat. It's good to see them do hard work. That shows, you know, I guess you said a lot of determination, and that work through pain, work through sweat, work through those things, whether it's gardening, grass cutting, carpentry work, pipe work,
okay,
roof work, whatever it is. Okay, you do car maintenance, that's about over now. All right, but all those things are hard work. It's good to see, because that stays in one's memory.
Good point. And young girls will watch their mama. Does she cook? Does she clean? Does she take care of the house? Or is it always a wreck? Yes, Lil?
Works together to accomplish things, and therefore they're contributing. Their work is to contribute to that household, and that household benefits them. Food, clothing, all the things that go on in that house, teaching them to be responsible for the upkeep and the maintenance and all the things that the parents do to make that home a very loving, kind place, yet clean and all the things that they need, by them contributing, teaching them that you're contributing to this house, you're part of this family.
Are you telling me you expect Noah to pick up after himself and hang up his clothes and all of that?
Yes.
Well, he answered that one real quick. That's right. Yes, Dawn?
Another thing about parents instilling reliability. When you tell your children you're going to do something, it speaks volumes whether you follow through on what you're going, what you told them you're going to do, or whether you don't. You're teaching them one of two things. You're teaching them that they can rely on you, that you, your word is your bond. What you tell them, if you're going to reward them for something, or if they're going to be punished for something when they don't do what they need to be doing. That's the reliability that you're teaching them.
Good point. I remember when I was studying on the family, there's a book, I don't remember even what it is, but it was talking, there's a lot of books been written about training your children, but there was one particularly that emphasized this point that Don's talking about is consistency, being consistent. And following up is what you say and do, and that's a good point. So, yes, Sally?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the most important thing that we can do for our children is to teach them what's in the Bible.
Okay. Good point. That certainly should be the focus of what we do. Yes, Keith?
This idea of work ethic or teaching our kids to be responsible, I think, affects the different types of relationships we have. If you think about the kids who are in school right now and you go through a project, you know, when you don't teach your kid to do that, and there is a kid who's taught that, you breed that bitterness and jealousy, you breed that bitterness of, I'm doing all the work, or you've read somebody who's lazy and sits back, it affects a relationship from the marriage perspective or the dating perspective. When you've got one spouse who is working and doing and the other one's just sitting around being a slob, or when you've got one who's constantly moving and the other one's just lazy, it affects your spiritual relationship. When you're not constantly working towards a goal, and we as parents need to remember that for our kids as well. You know, we're building the next Christian in a sense. We're teaching them. It's their faith, but we're showing them the way. We're teaching them the way. We're building the best person that we can for that spouse that they're going to meet. I mean, don't expect you to meet, you know, some A-list great person if you're not teaching them to be the same thing. And they may find somebody that has great qualities, but, you know, what happens when that parent hasn't done their job and they're not working and serving in the kingdom? So that may be a great support for your spouse, for your kid, but they may be letting them down in that way. And so we should remember, we do what we can, but it affects the different relationships we have on both sides.
Sure does. Yes, Salisa, you had a comment. Good comments, Keith.
Positive reinforcement. When they do something well, make sure they feel appreciated as well.
Okay, and that's what Don was talking about. That's a good point. Positive reinforcement. We're often real quick to point out what they did wrong, but what about encouragement? That's so positive. Anyways, the idea of just teaching reliability and trustworthiness with our young people. In Luke 16 and 10, very interesting parable, but we're not here to talk about the parable itself, but there's a little statement Jesus makes. You saw that in when he was addressing his apostles in Matthew. The master comes back and sees these servants working. He says he's going to put him over more stuff. He's that kind of person. Well, here you have in this parable, Jesus just makes a statement and applies it to his parable. But the statement is just a principle. It's a truth. He who is faithful in a little thing is faithful also in much. And who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. And so if your employer can see you're faithful to do this maybe menial task, maybe you'd be considered when there's a bigger opportunity. And the same thing is true with the young people and their parents. and husbands and wives, but it's a principle. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Just whatever you've been given, you know, if it's pulling the grass, if it's mowing the yard, there's young people who've never been taught to do those kind of things. And when they are have that job, you can tell they've not been taught. They're sloppy at it. And that's a failure on the part of the parents. What kind of men in Acts 6 and 3 were chosen to handle the dispersion to the needy? What kind of men? Acts 6, 3. Good reputation. How do you get a good reputation so that somebody says, here's a lot of money that people have contributed? Now you go out and find the people who are worthy, who need it. So you got all this money right here in your hands. Now, how do you know these guys aren't going to go just give it to their friends? Or go stash some for themselves away somewhere? You want men that's got a good reputation. For what?
King James says, men, seven men of honest report.
Okay, honest report. About what?
A task they've been charged with.
Huh?
A task they've been charged with.
Okay. The task they've been given, the responsibilities that they've been charged with, they've been demonstrating the fact. You can trust these men to fulfill the responsibilities they've been given. They got a good reputation. You can depend on these guys. And they needed some men. What size was the church by this time? Where did it start? How many did it start out with in Acts 2? 3,000, right? And the disciples kept multiplying. One time talking about 4,000 or 5,000. Big group. I don't know how many of the widows were. This is a big job. Seven men to take care of it. You need men of good reputation. I don't know how much money was collected. But you need somebody you can depend on. The apostles had other work they needed to do. This is a passage that we use to talk about what particular work in the local church.
Deacons.
And that's why we need men who are deacons who are dependable. That the elders can give them a task and forget it. They'll go do it. That's what you need for a deacon. Not just somebody who's got a good wife and they don't lie and cheat and all that and they go to church all the time. Somebody who's dependable. That's their character. And the elders can say, here, this is the thing we want you to take care of. We've got some good deacons here. The elders are very appreciative of these men with this character trait. Look over in the book of Ezra. The book of Ezra. And this is after they had returned from captivity. And you had the first return under Zerubbabel. Y'all all remember that next Wednesday, right? And when that took place. And the second return headed by Ezra. You'll all remember that, right? When that took place. And this is the second return. And they're headed back from Babylon. And we look down at verse 14. Forasmuch as you are sent by the king and his seven counselors to inquire concerning Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God which is in your hand, and to bring the silver and gold. Now the silver and gold came from, looks like, or the provisions that were sent back came from four sources. One, that was the king and his counselors have freely offered. Verse 16, all the silver and gold which you find in the province of Babylon. I don't know if that's Chaldeans who voluntarily wanted to help these people. There's a favorable attitude toward the people of God that's prevalent. I don't know. It doesn't say. But which you'll find in the province of Babylon. Then you have the freewill offering of the people and the priests. There's the third one. And then when you get down to verse 4, at the end of the verse, you have the royal treasury. The king said, whatever else you need, the royal treasury will provide. How much money was this? I mean, it's valuable stuff. There's silver, there's gold, there's utensils. that have been contributed. So what happens? Okay, you look down in the text, go to chapter 8, about the same thing here. Look in chapter 8, verse 29, about this same taking up all this money and utensils back to their homeland. Verse 29. Now, let me ask you a question. Was Ezra an honorable man? Should he have got offended if somebody would have said, Ezra, I want you to count how much money has been given to you. I want you to give an accounting. Should he have taken offense? Fact is, he stepped up. So look at 8:29. Verse 28, I said to them, you are holy to the Lord, the utensils are holy, the silver and the gold are a freewill offered to the Lord God of your fathers. Watch and keep them until you weigh them before the leading priest, the Levites, and the heads of the fathers' households of Israel at Jerusalem in the chambers of the house of the Lord. So the priest and the Levites accepted the weighted out silver and gold. So they weighed everything. In other words, they measured. It'd be like, here's a stack of $100 bills. Say, 1, 2, 3, 4. They counted everything. It wasn't dollar bills, it was silver and gold, utensils. To be sure they knew exactly how much they were leaving with, how much had been contributed. All right, then you get down to verse 34. So they came to Jerusalem, verse 32. And so verse 33, on the fourth day, the silver and gold and utensils were weighed out in the house of our God into the hand of the people, of course, who were responsible. Verse 34, everything was numbered and weighed. You can see Ezra going out of his way to provide for what was honorable. That's what you read about in 2 Corinthians 8, 20 and 21. When Paul was orchestrating this collection for the needy Christians in Jerusalem, collected by several churches, he said, we want everything to be open and above board where there's no question. We ought to seek that kind of procedure when we can so people know that we're trustworthy. There's no question. Ezra didn't have to count the money to be sure he didn't steal anything. It was so other people could have confidence. And it would be, of course, a personal safeguard as well. But you can see the emphasis on being trustworthy and dependable in these things. Any other comments on the lesson? Yes, Josh?
Just about our internal motivation to be trustworthy, reliable, dependable. And it's definitely good to have a good reputation and the potential to, you know, potentially receive more duties. But the fundamental aspect is our love for the person that we are being reliable to, that we are being dependable for. If we're doing things trying to be reliable just so that our reputation remains intact, we might be missing the love thy neighbor, the love thy brother, the love thy spouse, the child. That can be the strongest motivating factor, and that was the motivating factor why Christ was willing to die for us and lay down his life for us, because he loved us and we mattered so much to him. And when we look at our tasks, even to our, you know, at work or to our neighbor, if that person matters so much to us, we will strive to do these challenges, whether it be, you know, consistently doing some tasks or doing some tasks that, you know, occupies our time. We want to do that for people because we love them, we know God loves them, and it could potentially have a, you know, lasting, you know, life-changing impact on them.
That's a good point, Josh. I'm glad you brought that motive behind that. Very good. Same thing with our duties to God, because we love him. And that's a good observation, that it shouldn't just be a personal thing. I want to build me a reputation, but rather out of love and devotion for our fellow man or for the God of heaven. Good observation. Thank you, Josh. All right. Well, we've finished the character studies this quarter. We're a little past the quarter, but we had 13 lessons. One Wednesday night we weren't able to meet because of the water situation. But I appreciate your attentiveness and your involvement in the classes. Hopefully they've been something that might be of some use. And if the Lord is willing, we'll start not Sunday, but the Sunday week on a new set of studies. Next time, we'll probably do both Sunday and Wednesday on the same topic. That's where I'm headed right now, at least. So, but we'll let you know more about that as the time approaches.